on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard another episode of The Big Fish. And as you've heard in previous episodes, real concern about mushy fish syndrome moving south. Craig McGill, who spends so much time on the water, first rang the alarm bell. And as you know, on The Big Fish, we leave no stone unturned or no turn unstoned to find out about these things that impact our sport, both recreational fishing and, of course, the commercial fishers as well. And we've done a great deal of research. Coming up in just a moment, Emma Simkin will join us from the ABC News team, who've joined the Big Fish investigative team to put together this report on mushy fish syndrome, the Kudoa and the unicapsula in the kingfish and the mahi-mahi and many other of the beautiful fish that we target as recreational and commercial fishers. And there's some good news. It's solutions-based journalism, because there might be a way for us to test the fish that look fantastic when they're alive, but as soon as they're dead, as soon as you want to eat them, it's a different story. That's a very important story, and it's coming up next on The Big Fish. And we'll also get Craig McGill's reaction, the man who first blew the whistle on this situation, and then quite a few different scientists agreed that there's something definitely going on. And experts say a parasite that turns fish flesh to mush, if you missed the story over the last few weeks, could be travelling in fish around the coast. Recreational fishers say they're finding more kingfish with the parasite in Sydney Harbour. Commercial fishers in southern Queensland and northern New South Wales already avoid catching kingfish for fear of what's known as mushy fish syndrome. And it's not very nice. Emma Simkin brings all of the ends of the line together.
Whether it's commercial or recreational fishers, no one wants to reel in a beautiful kingfish only to see it turn to mush. A variety of microscopic parasites can literally turn seafood such as kingfish and mahi-mahi to a gel-like substance. And according to professional fishing guide on Sydney Harbour, Craig McGill, it's becoming more common further south.
I've caught more in the last two seasons than I have in 30 years combined fishing.
There are no telltale signs a fish has the parasite when it's caught, but Craig McGill says when it comes to cooking, it becomes obvious.
As soon as you put the heat on the flesh, it just goes to liquid. And best case scenario, it's like mashed potato consistency. Worst case, I tried to sous vide some kingfish and I literally got a bag of fluid. It can lead to some kitchen disasters too. I had a dinner party back here a while ago with about 12 people. I cooked up this kingy on the barbecue and I knew within seconds of it hitting the heat that I was in trouble, and it just completely fell apart. And yeah, it was a disaster. We ended up having meat pies.
There are several types of parasites that can infect various fish. Kudoa turns the infected fish to mush once it's killed, while unicapsula liquefies the fish when it's cooked. University of Sunshine Coast joint PhD candidate in marine ecology, Dr. Jessica Boland, explains.
Under a microscope, the parasite looks kind of like a jam drop, and that was first discovered in 1982 off eastern Australia, kind of off Brisbane. So that's the unicapsula that causes that mush, the mushy texture, only when cooking is applied. The spores, they float around the water column and they'll somehow get into contact with a kingfish. They'll burrow into the muscle tissue and then they'll aggregate into hundreds or thousands of spores. And it's only when these sacs break open after the fish dies that the parasites can then secrete an enzyme which then liquefies the surrounding tissue and causes that jelly meat or mushy texture to happen. But in the other case of mahi-mahi, that's most likely a Kudoa.
Dr. Julian Pepperell, a Queensland-based researcher and independent marine biologist, says the parasite is effectively trying to escape the dead host.
When the kingfish is killed, and especially when it's cooked, the little parasite is still alive and it tries to escape the host by liquefying the muscle around it. They secrete enzymes that liquefy the muscle and it's trying to get out of the dead host. But in doing so, the flesh of the fish turns mushy, which is not very nice.
Mushy fish syndrome, as it's known, has been documented in northern New South Wales and southern Queensland waters. But Dr. Boland says the parasite could be moving south.
It's entirely plausible that these parasites could be potentially moving further south down to Sydney, you know, hitching a ride on the East Australian Current. But I guess we really need more, baseline information before we know for sure.
At this stage, little is understood about the life cycle of the parasite, and researchers are calling for citizen scientists to report any fish they catch that turn to mush.
If you're going out, you're fishing and you're catching kingfish that turn to mushy texture, like record the day that you caught the fish, record the area you got it from, because, you know, more and more scientists are now starting to work on these problems, especially because it's in the public consciousness now. So all the data that you can get is great for us as scientists.
According to experts, there's no evidence in Australia of side effects to humans from eating fish infected with the parasite. Meantime, the Fisheries Research and Development Corporation is expected to sign a contract with RMIT University to produce a rapid diagnostic test. Nathan Bott is the chief investigator on the project.
This is a tissue-dwelling parasite, and certainly we would probably need to take some sort of sample, and there's two facets that we're looking at. One is developing a robust test that we know is going to detect what we want it to detect and not detect anything else and not give false positives. And then also look at ways that we can sample from fish and, you know, in the most rapid, in non-invasive, and from an animal care point of view, is best for them.
So if all goes to plan, serving a plate of liquid kingfish or mushy mahi-mahi will be a thing of the past.
Emma Simpkin there, tying up some loose ends when it comes to this fascinating parasite, and it was brought to our attention by Craig McGill, who spends so much time on the water in Sydney Harbour. It's The Big Fish. Coming up next, we'll get Craig McGill's reaction to all of this. Craig McGill, welcome back to The Big Fish.
Good morning, mate. How are you going?
Yes, things would be a bit wild on Sydney Harbour with all the wind and rain, but it stirs things up a bit. It doesn't hurt, does it? A bit of a fresh.
Oh, look, mate, you always need a bit of rain, bring those nutrients in and, stir things up a bit. It would actually, anything that cools this water down at the moment wouldn't be a bad thing, I can tell you.
Yeah, look, and possibly due to the record hot water coming down from Queensland, that East Coast Current, which is running like a steam train because of the hot water that's driving it, the parasites coming down as well to create the mushy fish syndrome. There's been a lot of water under the bridge since you identified this on The Big Fish.
Yeah.
The FDRC, who look after commercial and wreck fishers, are developing a test, like a rat test for it. That'd be gold, wouldn't it, Craig?
Oh, mate, look, I can tell you on so many levels. So first of all, you kill the fish. You feel bad about that when you find out that it's gone to jelly and you can't eat it and you've got to put the whole thing in the bin. Then you do all the processing, the icing, the filleting. You get it home, you backpack it down. That's a lot of work. Then you invite 10 people around, unpack it, cook it, and come out and tell them that they're having meat pies tonight. Like, the whole thing is, you know what I mean? Like, on so many levels, it's such a devastating thing. So a test like that would just be awesome.
They're sourcing a lot of the kingfish that's in the markets and in the restaurants from aquaculture in South Australia, and it's not down there because of the cooler water. Mm. So if this water cools down, maybe the mushy fish will cool off as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you say it's not down there now, but it wasn't really down here either, and it is now. Also, some of the guys in New Zealand were saying that their snapper have been seems to have been increasing in their snapper too, which I've never heard of it in snapper before. So, yeah, I mean, look, it may not be a problem now, but who knows how long that'll take till it is.
It's not an Australian problem. It's a worldwide oceanic problem, and usually not a great issue for the fish, these particular types of parasites, but the way that the water temperature is changing, it's starting to become so.
Yeah, it's just an odd spin, isn't it? The whole thing, like the fish, it doesn't seem to worry the fish, but then it's fine if you want to eat it raw, but then you cook it and it turns mushy. It's just a weird thing, isn't it?
Well, the one in the kingies is different to the one in the mahi-mahi. We found that that's unicapsular something or other, which is the scientific name for kingfish, so it's specific to that. That little parasite is specific to that species of fish. But then the one in the mahi-mahi is probably the kudoa, which is the jelly meat one. And as you were saying to us, the offshore brigade are saying some of the fish infected there will actually turn to jelly when they're in the ice box. But it's an interesting story because these parasites, they don't want to kill the host. They don't really have much impact on the host at all. If the host is dead, they don't have a way of getting around. So they rely on that host being healthy and happy. And so it seems as if it's just after these fish die that everything pops out.
We had a very long chat to the Jess, the girl you mentioned before, who's doing the university studies, and ended up speaking to her for about an hour. It's amazing how complex this whole situation is, and the whole life cycle of the thing. And I also mentioned to her that it could possibly be linked to the El Nino and the La Nina cycles, and possibly even all the rain that we get at that time. Who knows if that has some effect on the other host, which is some sort of marine worm. It's just so complicated. There's so many variables involved in it. It's going to be an interesting but very complex study, I think.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There, you know, this isn't definitive just yet. We know it's there, but the vectors, for the reasons being, this intermediary host, this particular little worm that they think is the one. You're right. I mean, the big rain events we had that La Nina rain events that created so much fresh coming into the system. Perhaps there's a link there. This is what they're trying to identify, Craig. It's fascinating, and great scientists involved. It makes you feel pretty confident that they'll be able to help us, because the Jessicas you mentioned, Jess Tout at CSU Port Macquarie and Jessica Bolan at University of the Sunshine Coast and RMIT, these people are brilliant scientists, and they really do value the citizen science, don't they?
She was extremely interested to hear my input, which is good, because, I mean, you know, there's only a certain amount that you can do on a science budget. You know, I've been out there pretty much every day, well, every working day of my life for the last 32 years, and you just can't pay for that in a science experiment. You know what I mean?
You're not jumping to conclusions. You're just observing. You're not saying that this is definitive. You're just eyes and ears on the water, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think from, you know, the citizen's point of view as well, there used to be a lot of sort of, you know, I guess they used to call them old wives' tales and myths, and people had just come up with all sorts of ideas. But I think citizens in general are more aware of, science and how things have to be proven, you know, proven. With, you can't just make something up and say that's the end of the story. So there's a lot more awareness amongst people as well that things need to be done. You know, that need to go through a process, a scientific process.
Just quickly, what's happening on Sydney Harbour? Anything to report?
Well, I can tell you probably the thing that's really fired up in the last few weeks is the squid. The squid that we got on Wednesday were just amazing. We get those massive ones. We call them aircraft carriers because you could land a little plane on the back of these things. they've really come on fire. So that's anybody looking for a feed of squid or you know, squid for some bait. They're going crazy out there at the moment. But generally, yeah, the fishing's been good. There's plenty of kingies around, mainly in the smaller sizes at the moment. Some very good flathead in the deeper spots. So on the mud bottoms, in the deeper water, sort of anywhere north of, say, Bradley's Head, there's some good spots there. And some massive tailor at the moment too.
Oh,
really, really big tailor.
Good fun. Good fun there. Yes.
Yeah.
Good fun there.
So, no, fishing pretty well.
Did you do any fishing over Easter, Craig?
I did, mate. Actually, I took a bit of time off and went down and visited my brother. He lives down at Shoalhaven Heads. and went fishing with my nephew, Jock, down there. And that fishery just never ceases to amaze me. I know there's still commercial fishermen in there, but, gee, the mind boggles how good that place would be if there wasn't. But even as it is now, the fishing's just amazing. I can't remember a dud trip down there. And it's right up my alley for the sort of stuff that I do. I love, you know, dropping lures into snags. So the bass fishing, the EP fishing, the brim, and they get both yellowfin and black brim down there. And we just worked up and down the river and the creeks there, and man, it was just amazing. I got a 50 centimeter EP.
Wow.
And then a few casts later, I got a 45 centimeter black brim.
That's great fun on lures.
Yeah, all on lures, and then we're a bit further
up. What were you using? A hard body or a soft plastic?
No, I almost exclusively use those pro lure plastics now for that style of fishing where I am there. So the little clone prawn was what I got most of them on.
Nice, nice. Hard. They go really hard, those big brim and big EPs.
Oh, mate, they're just amazing. And then a bit further up in the fresh, I thought we were sort of out of EP country and getting right up into the bass stuff. Dropped a lure down under a snag up there and pulled out a 60-centimeter dewey. It was all virtually fresh water, yeah. So
what a great trip. What a great trip. Gee whiz.
And that's not to mention the flatties and all the stuff we got, just sort of, I guess you'd call it bycatch because we weren't targeting them, but heaps of flatties, heaps of yellowfin brim, and, yeah, amazing spot down there. And it actually, you know, it fishes well through summer, but it actually starts really peaking now, from now and well into winter. It's still fishing great June, July.
After a big swell, and we've got a bit of that coming with this low pressure system going through, I had one of our big fish listeners send me a photo of a huge snapper that he got at the entrance to the Shoal Haven off the rock wall, land-based. It was a monster fish. It was up towards eight or so kilos. It was an absolute beauty, you know. So the snapper will come in off the reef system into the opening to the Shoal Haven River as well.
Very, very productive system. When you have a look at the sort of surrounding geography, you can tell with most rivers, actually, I think, how they're going to fish when you look at what's around them. So it's an incredibly fertile river. Rich, you know, really rich floodplains, and, you know, a lot of farming land. So I guess that's a bit of a downside because there's probably runoff from there. But, you know, the fact that there is a lot of farming land means that it's a fertile area. And that actually does reflect in the river itself. If you get a river that's got, you know, sort of pretty arid land around it, the river itself will probably be pretty arid as well.
Yeah, the nutrients come in and fire the system up, yeah.
Yeah, the nutrients and then all the, you know, the bugs and stuff, I guess, when you're talking bass, the bankside vegetation, all the bass, you know, they feed on that sort of stuff. I actually used to fish a local river where the bass fishing was sensational. And one day that the National Parks people went through and pulled out all the willow trees. Now, I understand why they did it, because they're not native. But the fishing went downhill dramatically after they did that.
Yeah.
And those willow trees used to provide shade and cover. But I don't know if you've ever seen a willow tree in summer. It's crawling with bugs of all different types. And once they cleaned them out, there was a noticeable decline in the fishing.
Yeah, I think the method they use now is to make sure that the native trees establish. You can poison and chop the willows, but leave the root systems to stabilise the bank, and then there'll be a lot more bugs and things on the native trees, but you just can't get rid of the willows in one fell swoop and denude the banks and let them erode away. It's sort of a tough management task, but I think they're probably better at it now. But you're right, it's a habitat makes fish happen, and it sounds like the Shoal Haven's still got some good habitat. Tight lines, Craig McGill.
Thanks, mate. Talk soon.
On ABC Radio, this is The Big Fish.
Oh, g'day, folks. Now, anyone that listens to the Saturday morning fishing program on the ABC, they will have heard of these two characters, Baitfish Bernie and Dogfish Dave.
Some say he was born while his mum was at sea. Some say he was born down at Circular Quay. He'd rather go fishing than work, rest or play. He's called Baitfish Bernie from Botany Bay. Now Bernie, he met up with old Dogfish Dave, and one day at work they were having a rave. Bernie says, "Dave, I've caught brim down the coast, and I'll catch anything, but I'm not one to boast." Old Dogfish, he knew that the challenge was made, and he's not one to shy from a challenge once laid.
"I'll catch you a flathead and raise you a brim. In fact, I can catch anything that can swim."
So they set off for Eden, the scene had been set, and the tussle was on once the lines had got wet. They hauled and they baited till dawn the next day, then went home exhausted, their catch to be weighed. The tally was made and the scales don't lie. The result, it was posted, it ended a tie. They both were astounded and had a close look. Then Bernie says, "Dave, tell me, how do you cook?"
"So much for the Waymaster."
So off to the task they had set for themselves, and down to the markets they cleared off the shelves, with eggs and with batter, spices and herbs. The feast that they cooked would be truly superb. The locals then feasted till all had their fill, with all satisfied they were full to the gills. Time had now come for the people to vote, a difficult task when you're reeling with bloat.
"Oh, stinker, I think I'm gonna be sick.
Me too, strap a hole."
One of them fainted, another one burst. Others had stretch marks the length of their girths. Four went to hospital feeling the pinch. Three were removed with the aid of a winch. The ruling no contest was promptly declared, and Baitfish and Dogfish were left in despair.
"This must be decided before it strikes dawn.
We'll sleep on the matter, decide in the morn." Back at the camp as the both of them slept, the eggs they had eaten had taken effect. The crowd was awoke with a thunderous roar, as off to the toilet the both of them tore. Now a contest was on that could set them apart, and Dave gained an edge as he reeled off the fart. He reached the latrine and he slammed shut the door, and in one big swift motion he settled the score. Ah, yo-le-le-le. They both had agreed that the contest was won. The winner could now have his day in the sun. But what was the trophy they gave Dogfish Dave?
What do you think, Bushy?
Oh, I don't know.
A gold-plated turd title catch of the day. A gold-plated turd title catch of the day.
Oh, those two, they really are good mates. Very competitive, good fun to fish with too on Botany Bay. They really do have a great time on the water, and that's what it's all about. Hey, speaking of fishing, mates, Stinker has had a big overseas trip. He's gone all the way to Hawk's Nest. And we catch up with the Big Fish regular, Nadia Taylor, who's encountered a flying flounder on the mighty Manning River and had a great time getting back into fishing after a little bout of illness. So it's very good to see Nadia back on the water. That's coming up on The Big Fish.
Saturday is a very fine day to do a little work in the yard. But when the sun is shining away, it makes the work too hard.
It makes the work too hard.
Saturday is a very fine day to get my homework done. But when the sun is shining in May, we ought to go have some fun.
So
let's go fishing instead of just go wishing.
what do you say we go away for a while?
Dig those worms out of the side.
Put them in a can and go get a rod.
Let's go fishing for a day and a half a mile. Let's go fishing for a day and a half a mile.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Look, everyone who listens to this knows how proud you are to live at Nelson Bay, Port Stephens, you know, your beloved Fingal Bay. But sometimes you go overseas. I believe you've been across to Hawk's Nest.
Hawk's Nest Tea Garden. You know, the strange part about it all is that it's not in the Port Stephens Shire. And even weirder is that the water that laps up onto Jimmy's Beach at Hawk's Nest and Tea Gardens, if you have one leg in the water and one leg on the land, well, one leg is in Port Stephens Shire and the other leg is in the Great Lakes Shire. Now, you know, I like to make things as simple as possible. Wouldn't it be a good idea to declare Hawk's Nest Tea Garden part of Port Stephens Shire?
Well, coming up in just a moment, we're fishing on the Manning River, which is part of the shires further north, so that they might be there might be war. There might be war if you try to secede territory from those shires further north, Stinker.
Well, I suppose you've got to draw the line somewhere, and where it is drawn, the northern line of Port Stephens is drawn on the northern end of the Perua Bridge. Now, that's all well and good, but then our friends, and we've got so much in common with them, Scott. I mean, I've written the history of this area over many, many years, and you can't really talk about one side of the port without talking about the other side. I must mention there's a lady on the north side, on the Tea Gardens Hawk's Nest side, named Jan Wynne. Now, Jan is a historian, and she's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. She's just released a book on the AA Company. That was when they bought 1 million acres for £1 million or whatever, and they had sheep. They tried to graze sheep around the port, which, of course, was not the right sort of soil or grass, and that moved them further up into the valley. But Jan Wynne does an excellent job. And so she writes on the north side about history, and I write on the south side about history. But she's very thorough, and I reckon her work's excellent.
Well, I guess it's a community of interest, isn't it, Stinker, that the people at Hawk's Nest would associate more as people of the Nelson Bay area or Port Stephens area. And that AA company went right down towards Newcastle too, didn't it? There's an old mansion down there, and some of the people involved in that, they're like characters out of swashbuckling novels.
Yeah, well, it was a long time ago in the mid-1800s. But it's a wonderful place. It's a very well-kept secret, which now will not so well-kept. But if you look it up on the map, it's directly opposite Nelson Bay, Shoal Bay. Shoal Bay and Nelson Bay look at Tea Gardens and Hawk's Nest, who look back. And then, of course, further down the north of Hawk's Nest is Seal Rocks. So it's just glorious country. And then out off the coast, of course, is Cabbage Tree Island and Broughton Island. So it's just such exciting country. But one of the best trips you can take is if you, we leave from Nelson Bay, we go across the port, past a little oyster village that was known as Pindyma, and then up the Myall River underneath the Singing Bridge at Tea Garden that connects Tea Garden to Hawk's Nest. You go underneath that bridge and then you'll meander up through the wonderful vegetation. Oh, gee, like I've never seen vegetation like this before. And it's quite a distance. It's about 14 miles, I think, until you come to a little prawn village or a gathering of huts called Tamboy. And Tamboy, back in 1920, was the hub of the prawn catching, the Myall prawn, which still is very, very, you know, there's plenty of them around right now. So it's been sustainable right through until now. It's great to see, really.
Do they still have the draw for where they set their nets and the season and all the rest of it?
Oh, my word. You know, and that's unique. It's like a lotto. You know, you draw a number out of a hat, so to speak, and that number will reflect where on the Myall River you're permitted to set your net. And then you've got to work out, you know, how you're going to do it, what time, over what time period. But over the last few years, the Myall prawns have been just wonderful. They're a school prawn, but because they come out of brackish water, they're very sweet prawn. And really, if you, and they sometimes, particularly if you can get the larger ones, I mean, I find the little ones a little bit fiddly, but if you get the larger Myall Lake prawn, I don't think there's a better prawn around than that one.
There's no doubt, Stinker, they leave the big, tough outside king prawns for dead, don't they? They are just so sweet and so beautiful. You get the medium-sized ones. There's no better prawn for sure. We're speaking with John Stinker Clark, who's been overseas. He's been at Hawk's Nest. Hey, when you went under the Singing Bridge, what was it? Was it humming? Was it singing? What was the song, Stinker?
Yeah, rock around the clock.
Rock around the rock lobster.
I had a purpose, and this was yesterday. I had a purpose to go over there. I spoke at the Hawk's Nest and District Probus Club. Well, it's a fantastic club. I reckon there were 80-odd people there, and they were so receptive, and we spoke for quite a long time after I gave a presentation. I gave a picture presentation because I collect old black and white photos, and a lot of them around Broughton Island. So I spoke about the history of Broughton Island and all the nationalities that have lived over there and the fish and lobsters and they were mesmerised because it's a funny thing with Broughton Island. Everyone can see it and everyone knows where it is, but no one, very few people have been there. So I'd suggest at some stage, go and have a look at the place because it is really unique.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And some good stories from up at Tamboy. I love your one about the drunken goanna and all sorts of hijinks up that way. It's almost in a jungle, isn't it? Like those giant palm things, and it's a really unique part of the world. And it's a bit of a secret entrance, isn't it, too, to go through there and through Hawk's Nest and up into the Myall complex. You could navigate and explore that in a kayak or a little boat forever. And the other fellow who put the place on the map, of course, was former Prime Minister John Howard, who would go regularly for a little family holiday at Jimmy's Beach, and there was a covenant with the media to leave him alone and let him have a little swim and a relax over there at Jimmy's Beach.
Well, that worked for a while. Unfortunately, it didn't last, which is a bit disappointing because every person deserves some to be private at some stage. But poor Mr. Howard, when the photographers found out he was sunning himself on the beach or whatever, because they swarmed. But anyway, that's another story. But,
yeah, they were pariahs. They were pariahs after that too, because a lot of people in the media stuck to that rule to leave the poor bloke alone to have a little bit of recharge of the batteries. But it's beautiful, beautiful water there, isn't it? Lovely, crystal clear, and a lovely white beach.
Well, the Jimmy's Beach from Pindyma through Corrie Island and then onto Jimmy's Beach and then to Yakabar Headland, it's glorious. And then on the main beach, which is Bennett's Beach, which runs all the way from Yakabar right up north to the Little Gibber. And now this beach is, like, I don't know how long it is, but it's a big beach. And really, when you're on Broughton Island and you look at the beach and you can hear, you're 3 kilometres or 2.5 kilometres away, and if someone's driving on that beach in a four-wheel drive on a still day, you can hear them 3 kilometres away. And the sound goes across the water and you can hear this sort of real light drone and you're wondering, where is that? What is that thing? And then you see a little vehicle It's only the size of a sort of an ant going along the beach. But, oh, gee. And the fishing. Oh, and crabbing. Well, crabbing's been a bit slow lately. But the fishing, particularly around Jimmy's Beach, is famous for flathead and whiting, of course. They're the main ones. But now, of course, Scott, it's the mullet season. Well, they're on the move. And they had a big haul, Lord, 2 days ago on Stockton Beach. And that's the first sign. Because all those mullet moved north. So those mullet have come out of Lake Macquarie and the Hunter River, and they're heading north, and the fishermen netted them there. So they'll be in Fingal Bay within the week.
That's my secret to catching crabs, to a nice fresh sea mullet. I'll go down to the fishermen's co-op and see if I can get a few to put in the freezer. And it's funny how the crabs have been slow there, because in my little waterway on Good Friday, I went out at 6 a.m. with a mate. I had never seen anything like it. I had never seen the crabs, big male blue swimmers, on like you wouldn't believe. You can only use lines. We're getting 2 and 3 at a time on the lines. You didn't know what to do. You're trying to pull them in, trying to net them. We got 14 and called it quits. And they were beautiful big crabs all on the run-out tide, all in the space of an hour or so, moving on the tide. And they were just in plague proportions. I've never seen anything like it. Every cast, every bit of mullet that hit the bottom, bang, a crab on it. And they were hungry too. So who knows? Who knows what the cycle is for crabs? Someone needs to do a bit of research, because this was the best crab fishing I've ever had, Stinker.
That's good to hear. And I reckon of all the seafood that's available to us, and let's face it, we're very, very fortunate. The seafood that's best, you can't beat it anywhere in the world, in my opinion. And that is my favourite. A big blue swimmer, I reckon, cannot be beaten. I mean, a mud crab's okay too. I love prawns. Lobsters, I reckon, are a bit overrated. Squid rings, yeah, crumb, yeah, that's all good. Oh, they're beautiful, beautiful. But if I was to rate them out of 10, I reckon the blue swimmer, the big blue swimmer, not those one fiddly little ones, but the size of the legal size of the blue swimmer is too small. It needs to be boosted up a bit. But those big blue swimmers, oh, they're crackers.
Mate, you've got me there. There's nothing better. I had them for a week for breakfast, lunch and dinner on buttered toast with the salt and pepper. The best food in the world. If it was my death row meal, that's what I'd have. But I've got to catch it myself. It's got to be fresh. They don't really take too well to being frozen and stored and moved around. You know, you can have those ones from South Australia. I don't think they're any good. Hey, tight line, Stinker. The people of Hawke's Nested will never be the same.
gee. And they're friendly and they've got a great club and I really enjoyed their company. Hooroo, Scott.
Hooroo, Stinker.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
My blue suede shoes. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. So if you can't wait, just get you some bait and come go fishing with me. I love my boogie woogie. I love to play my jazz. But I need a break. I'm going down to the lake. And get me a wide mouth bass. I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. So if you can't wait, just grab some bait and come go fishing with me.
trying to be good. You can shout out Tangeray, but I'll be in my dream going upstream. I'll be back in 30 days. I'm going fishing. Oh, yes, I'm going fishing. Just grab your pole and meet me down at the hole and come go fishing with me. Yes, I'm going fishing. Oh, yes, I'm going fishing. I'm going fishing. Just grab your pole and lead me down at the hole and just come fishing with me.
It's the Big Fish with the keenest fisher I know, Nadia Taylor, back on deck after a bit of a health issue a while back, some serious operations, but as soon as the stitches were out, she was back into it and catching some great fish. That's Nadia, T-A-Y-L-O-R, not T-A-I. L-O-R, like the fish. How are you, Nadia?
I'm really good, Scott. How are you?
Yeah, great. We spoke to you about that incredible trip you had as you were recovering at Goat Island, where you caught some cracking kings, some really big, beautiful fish. It was a hot bite. So that was sort of the start, and you sort of went out in the estuaries and then went out to sea, because that really does put a lot of stress on the body. But now you're fighting fit and 100%, I believe.
I sure am, and I'm catching up on lost fishing time.
it's great, and we haven't checked in for a while, so we did hear about that amazing Goat Island experience. That was just one of the hottest kingy bites I've ever heard of. That's just madness and mayhem to be catching them that quickly and that big. But you've had some fun on the Manning River. The Manning River was part of your fishing-led recovery.
It sure was. I've got a mate up there who we fish regularly, and what better way to get back into it than do a bit of estuary fishing on the Manning? It was just divine.
It's funny, you know, we speak about just then with Stinker, we were talking about hawk's nests and the entrance to the Myall Lakes and the Myall River and Nelson Bay. And then to the north, we talked to Treno about the Camden Haven and the Hastings and the Nambucca and the Maclay, all those great rivers on the mid-north coast. And we talk a lot about the rivers with Kendall Kramer up around Coffs and the North Coast, but we don't talk about the Manning enough for our residents around Taree and Old Bar, that Wingham, that part of the world. It's a great fishery. It's a bit of a secret fishery. It's a big river, isn't it?
It's huge, and there's just so much variety. You know, you can really try and target different estuary fish at different times, and it's just a beautiful system. It really is.
How did you go? What did you target?
Oh, well, we were targeting flathead because I still haven't caught my huge unicorn 1 metre flathead. So we were thinking, oh, well, maybe the Manning will be kind to us. So we were targeting flathead, but we were catching a whole bunch of different things. Flounder and, you know, all of the tailor and all of the fun stuff that you find in the estuary.
Tell the listeners about the poor flounder. You were so excited to get back on the water that you pulled its poor teeth out, I believe.
I think the lips are still on that hook, to be honest. Yeah. Look, we were casting around a certain area that looked rather fishy. And it was around the some oyster beds that were around, or the oyster leases that were around the Manning there. And cast my soft plastic into it. Was very excited to get my first bite or my first strike. I was only on a very light gear, you know. I was only on I think we were on a 2500 looking for flatties. I struck that poor fish so hard in all my excitement. It went flying over my shoulder. I'm pretty sure it ended up somewhere in Sydney.
That happens. That does happen. But if you're catching flounder, that's sort of where the flathead lie as well. Did you get a few flatties?
Oh, we did. We got a couple of really good flatties. But to be honest, we were having a bit of a competition on the water that day. So hubby was on another boat with my mate Georgie's dad, Dennis, and we were having a bit of a competition, and to be honest, they actually found the bigger fish. I don't want to say that in public, but they certainly did. Him and Dennis caught some stonkers that day.
Did they get the magical meter?
No, they didn't.
No, that's a rarity. A meter flathead is just a beast to be reckoned with, because the girth and the size of the head is the thing, because they're quite thin down towards the tail flathead, so it's all in the head and the shoulders, the size of those huge ones. I mean, they're ridiculous, the size of the head. They're like a dinner plate.
They are, and they also are just, you can know why they look they're talked about as lizards, because they really do have a very lizardy look, just the head and the girth of the head. It is very, very impressive.
That's great habitat, the Manning River, and some huge mulloway coming out of there of late too. It's really bounced back as a mulloway fishery. And I know the folk at Wingham were concerned about netting of bass on their spawning run, and I think they've been able to work on that problem as well, because the bass seem to be pretty good up in the top reaches last time I was up there. So it's a bit of a secret,
bass there.
A bit of a secret system. Did you go from the mouth to the ocean to the mountains, or?
No, we didn't. We pretty much were sort of around the sort of little alleys. We did see the open, and we have fished more open there, but this time we were sort of in those little sort of creeks and trying to find where the big mamas would be hiding to lay their babies.
Yeah, yeah, in their ambush spots. Oh, it's a great fishery. What else have you been up to? I believe as you recovered, you went out to sea as well.
I certainly did. So for me, you know, catching up with people and fishing with them has been something that I've wanted to do since I've been better. So caught up with another one of my mates down the south coast, Vicky and Scott, and they're very keen to go out and marlin fish. And I've never had this sort of passion. Like, I've been, you know, blue water fishing. I love blue water fishing. I've caught some mahi-mahi, dolphin fish, and other sort of species when we were fishing in Indonesia and all this sort of stuff. But never had the real passion to go out and fish for marlin. And that's they love doing that because they're down the south coast around Wollongong. And they invited me on the boat to have a look at how it's done. And we spotted a few, and we ended up hooking a hammerhead.
Wow.
But it was a very beautiful day on the water, and it was just a different experience. I've never experienced all of those, all of the teasers, and it's a different style of fishing I haven't partaken in.
Yeah, it's a very specialised form of fishing, isn't it? And they are amazing creatures, particularly when they come up behind the teasers and behind the lures. I've seen it out of Mossy Point, actually, on the south coast, where they light up. They change colour. They flash like a traffic light.
Yeah, they're amazing creatures. And like I said, I never had a passion to fight them for, you know, hours upon hours upon hours. But then when you see them in the water and you get all excited, it all changes. And now I'm keen to go back on the boat and actually see if we can tag one.
We're speaking with Nadia Taylor, who's one of the keenest fishers on the Big Fish. And we've had some great fishers through the Women's Recreational Fishing League. Of course, Joe Starling, Kendall Kramer, Laurie Anderson, who've been having a chat with us as well. And you came through Joe's mentoring programs and things as well that has made you into quite an accomplished fisherwoman. Obviously, we're all learning, but it's a changing trend, isn't it? It's lovely now. You're a bit alone there with Joe, but now the girls are really starting to find their form and help here with the Big Fish program as well. It's lovely to have a bank of fisherwomen to go to along with the fishermen.
How good is it, Scott? And, you know, we all love fishing. In different ways and in different types of fishing. And just to have a whole bunch of girlfriends that you can talk fishing with and not just the guy friends, it's really, really awesome. And to have more women getting into that is just brilliant. And, you know, if it wasn't for my involvement with the Bar Apprentice, I wouldn't have met all of these mates that are just, we share information, you know, whether it be styles of fishing or whatnot, or, you know, what's working on a certain system. It's something we just all want to have a yarn about. And it's just great to have, you know, women coming through and sharing their passions.
Hey, tight lines to you, Nadia Taylor. Great to have you back on the Big Fish, and great to see you firing on all cylinders.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well?
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn.
Yeah.
He said to himself with a great big yawn.
Ho ho.
The next time I come up this way.
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet.
Oh, oh, oh. Oh, what an accident. Oh, oh, oh. You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.